Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Juke Joint. We are back after a two-week break, or not 2 weeks, I guess just 1 week, but it's been 2 weeks since we last recorded, so it feels like longer to me. I'm joined once again by my good friend, Aaron New.
Hey, I feel like I always say that. It's like every time we introduce each other, it's like, hey, what's going on? Hey.
Well, I keep making Fonzie references every time you introduce me.
I guess we're even then.
Yes. But,
So what's up with you? How's your 2 weeks been?
Been a busy, busy time. Midterms have come up. I've looked at my grades and, I've got all A's.
That's awesome. So, it's so weird that midterms have happened already. I keep forgetting, like, we're recording this on
March
1st.
Well, because
March
it's
1st,
like,
it's weird.
I think what makes it weird is that it's now March and it still kind of feels like winter. Spring has not come around yet over here on the East, so it's that sense of, like, you still feel like it's early in the semester when really you're, like, halfway through it. It's crazy. Yeah. I guess that's a nice thing to update you all on. My grades are fine. Something fascinating. I recently reconnected with one of the members of the Lazy Players, which is my first show I ever did. And his name's Lucas, and he has invited me to take part in the age-old ritual, Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, I gotta hear about this.
So, I know practically nothing about this game. I know that it is a fantasy role-playing game, and there's a lot of math involved. My hope is that it's more exciting than the other kind of role-playing game that I've played, which is role-playing video games, which bore the hell out of me. But I think, from what I've seen of D&D depicted in media, or at least in the sympathetic way it can be depicted by media, when it's not being used as an excuse to make fun of nerdy people, it seems to me like it might be something I will enjoy.
I played a couple rounds once, but I'm like listening to like podcasts and stuff about it. It's so cool because, especially if you have a good game master or dungeon master, I forget what the actual term is. It tells you how little I know about it. But like, if you get someone to run the game and they know how to craft a good story, it is such a cool time.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling like it's just going to be a fun, or I hope at least it's going to be a fun, chill time with friends from long ago and far away.
Is this a D&D group that drinks, or is it pretty stable?
Oh, I think that there probably will not be too much drinking, because I think the time we all have... Well, for one thing, we all need to drive out to people's places. But I think it like comes right before some of the members have to go to work. So, I mean, if they want to do that, I'm not going to yell at them. But I'm not their work manager, so it's like... Anyway... So, I mean, like, I think it'll be fun. I got my dice. I got my strangely cut die.
Nice. Are they, like, the Amazon special ones, or are they something fancy?
Oh, I didn't bother trying to, like, go on Amazon and get the real cool deluxe thing. Not for my first go-around. I'm going to have to first deduce whether or not I even enjoyed the experience before I get too deluxe into it.
Have you got your character made up yet?
I do. I do have my character made up.
A class or race or African. I don't know what the hell they categorize these things.
Well, let me see if I can find the PDF that I downloaded.
I could see you being...
Yes.
Let me think. Some sort of elf, maybe?
I am a half-elf.
Okay. I was right. Ha-ha.
I am a bard. Level 1 bard, obviously. I named him after the main character from Genesis's album The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Which is?
Rael.
That's actually pretty fitting.
It's fitting, actually. It actually came up as one of the recommended names. So I was like, all right, then I'm just going to roll with it. I got some pretty good dice rolls, too, on my stats. I've got 12 strength, 17 dexterity, 16 constitution, 16 intelligence, 16 wisdom, and 19 charisma.
Wow.
With a +4 modifier. So,
jeez.
I did okay for myself, so.
Were those, like, automatically generated for you? Like, how does that work?
It worked with Lucas saying to me, here's a dice, roll. And then he just, I wrote down the five numbers I got, and then he told me, okay, charisma will be important for being a bard. So I went, okay, well, the highest number I got, I'm going to use for charisma. So.
Wow.
So that's how that happened.
Sounds like you're set. You're going to kill
it. I think I'm, he actually said, I think you've almost created the perfect circle of a character. So I'm like, great. That's what I'm going to need for literally my first go ever.
Do you know the storyline yet or no?
No. Well, I think he told me the storyline, but, and this sounds so rude, and if he hears this, I'm sorry, but like over the years, Lucas was the kind of person who like, I developed a habit and a skill of listening to about half the words he would say. So I think he told me the story and I picked up maybe 45% of it. So I'm just going to be seeing how this goes.
But yeah, now, yeah, I'm interested to hear this
I'm
too.
Certain I'll update as time goes on. I'll give updates on how this is progressing.
Yeah,
but
your
what
first
about
game?
You? For those who are fearing that this will be much too nerdy and for D&D.
Hey, if you think D&D is nerdy at this point, I think it's not only has it been cool, it is now popularly cool. So if you
think
it's nerdy.
I have to give credit to Dan Harmon for definitely popularizing it. I think the community episode of D&D was one of the highlights of that series, so I have to give credit where credit's due. But what about you? You went off to Colorado.
I did, yeah. Week. Did some skiing. Did some brewery hopping. Doing some sightseeing. It was so cool. It was such an awesome weekend. So, long story short, my girlfriend's got some friends of hers from college, and I guess they're my friends too. I shouldn't underestimate
I
that.
I guess.
She just knows
friends.
Them a lot better than I do, so that's where the disconnect is. But yes, we went there for the weekend to see them. Went up to Rocky Mountain National Park. It was like pouring the snow down and like foggy, so you couldn't really see much. But
did they play John Denver the entire time?
It was mentioned once at some point in conversation somewhere, but I was like 5 beers in at this point at a brewery, so I can't remember anything about it. So
just drunkenly stumbling your way through the mountains.
That was so cool, but. So we went to Rocky Mountain National Park. We went to this place called Winter Park, kind of a ski resort up in the mountains in this little like town and stuff like that, and had this Airbnb for the weekend. So a lot of beer, a lot of skiing. Went to this little town called Golden where they brew Coors Light. So if you're a Coors Light fan, you know, it's brewed in the mountains of Colorado.
That's for all the beer drinkers out there, a.k.a. not me.
Coors Light tastes okay.
It does it? I
when
can't
you see
tell.
Like, if you want a decent cheap beer, it's not bad, but then you see where it's brewed, and it's just like, it's like looking at, it's just like a giant industrial factory brewing beer. Then we went like a mile up the road to this place called New Terrain, which is like the equivalent of, I can't really compare it to anything. It's just like a really nice microbrewery. Where, like, the beer and, like, everything happens in, like, this one small building, and the beer was awesome, and then I see that in the Coors Light factory, I'm thinking, oh, God, I can't drink the big label beers. It just, I see that building and I just get scared. It just looked so ratty. It was so ratty in this nice place, which I just didn't get, but hey.
What's your preferred beer branding, or what's your kind of beer that you're into?
I like darker brews. Let me think. Julia's big into Miller High Life, just because I think it's like a college thing. I can drink some of those beers, like Miller High Life. Coors Light's not bad. I don't know. I'm not really into those. I like the really like bitter IPAs. Like hazy IPAs are awesome. Stouts and porters, that sort of thing. So
I get
really
the
just
impression
varies across the board.
I get the impression you'd be into the bitter brews.
Yeah.
From what you've had me try.
You can thank John Casey for that one, because I was like. Like when I was younger, like PBR was like shoved in my face. It was like, drink it, it's free beer. And I'm thinking like, okay, like this stuff sucks, but I'll deal with it. I turned 21. John Case takes me around like to the nice bars and breweries in Morgantown and just like buying all this nice beer for me. And I'm thinking like, damn, like this stuff is good. Like this is great. So
I can't tell. I'm a cocktail person myself.
Yeah. I feel that.
I gotta get that, And even then, like, I once tried to have my cocktail without adding the whipped cream,
mm-hmm.
Like, because out of interest, so I discovered recently, because I don't know if I've talked about my cocktail before, I like to have an orange creamsicle kind of cocktail.
I think you've talked about it every episode.
Every episode?
For about the past month, yeah. Oh, my God. It's been brought up in some aspect.
I'm a fucking alcoholic. But the thing is, you can cut this if you'll have to scan over the episodes, I guess, but you can cut this if I've said this before. I once tried, out of interest, to have the orange triple sec without the whipped cream.
Yeah.
And it was like drinking petrol. It was like straight up, like, I had it, I'm like, wow, this is orange-flavored gasoline.
It's like, if you're drinking straight alcohol, it's going to be intense. Like, you got to dilute it with something nice.
I mean, I had moonshine once, and it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, it was, where you get it from.
It was stinging, but it was, like, fine.
That's not drinking petrol. I was drinking, like, I don't even know. It's like drinking straight fire. Like rubbing alcohol on fire.
Well, I mean, I always call drinking alcohol fire. I mean, straight up, I think when I first had the orange creamsicle drink, I would tell friends, it's like drinking an orange smoothie, but with an extra hint of fire. Which is better for me than beer, which is just like the aftertaste of someone's vomit. I can handle flames more than I can, like, stomach bile. So.
I feel that. Maybe yes. you haven't had the good beer yet.
I don't know. We went to Indianapolis, and we were trying to get me into that beer, and I just couldn't do it. I was
bar, though. No, we gotta take you to the breweries of the land.
Of there's the some nice land ones. And soil.
There's some nice ones. Big Timber's expanding down in Elkins, which is rad. A short story down like Reevesville. That's near you. That's like 20 minutes from you.
Reevesville is an interesting place.
It's weird. It's like I don't expect Reevesville to be. I don't expect it to have all the stuff that it does because it's so out there. Like
Record Store Day is coming up. I'm certain we'll be talking about that at some point.
Oh yeah, are you going to go to it there or no?
It's the one that's closest to me, so yes.
Nice.
Like, and even then, close to me is driving on that one winding road from Westover to Reevesville for like 15 minutes.
Yeah. It feels like it's so close, but it's down such a windy 2-lane road.
I'm stunned that Morgantown doesn't have a venue for Record Store Day.
They used to, like, what, 10 years ago or something like that, and then. Like,
yeah, I mean, because I mean, I guess like, I don't know. I guess in some way that we don't really have like a record store in this town. Yeah. We have the chains.
Uh huh.
Like my friend John works at FYE. Mm-hmm. And they sell records there. I think Barnes & Noble sells some vinyl. But, like, beyond that, it's, like, Retroteque and that vintage video games and cassettes place used to sell vinyl, and then they shut down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's not really a lot in that sort of, like, homemade vinyl, like, record store place in Morgantown, which is shocking to me, considering how much of an economic bustle Morgantown can be, if it wants to be. But no, you got to go down to Reevesville to be in the center of it.
Well, you know, even the slightly bigger cities, like, okay, Charleston has a couple places. I don't even think Huntington has a record store that at least I know of. Like, I don't know. Like, those are the bigger metros in the state, but you still got to travel to, like if you want a solid record shop, you know, there's like, God, what's the name of the place in Reevesville?
Oh, I'm actually looking it up. I know what it is. It's Assumption Records.
Assumption,
I'm looking
yeah.
up just to see if. Yep, you're still in their Facebook picture.
Am I?
You still are with your U92 shirt.
Oh God, that's been like 5 years ago.
It's still you. You're still there.
I think that was when I first became assistant production director, and I was there, and that's when I met like a couple alumni.
Yeah.
It's like me
but
and
it's still you.
I think Jamie and Ed. I can't remember.
I don't know if I don't see Ed in there, but I definitely see you.
Let me take a look here.
In a fisheye lens with Van Morrison's Astral Weeks up on the wall next to the Rolling Stones' first album and what looks like Big Star's Radio City.
Okay, I look in the background. Okay, there's I'm seeing people I recognize now. So behind me, there's like the FBY with Angus Young.
Yes.
I think the girl on the left is it Jamie? I think is her name. I can't remember now. It's been like literally, it's been so long ago. And then, I recognize some other alumni in there as well. But yeah.
I picked up the physical copy of your last record there.
Oh, yeah. Which I remember you telling me about that. I'm like, we didn't give you a copy? Like, you didn't just grab one off the table at some point with as much as you're hanging around?
No, I'm not up for being, like, the favorite who gets the favors. Like,
if anybody gets a free copy of our CD, it's going to be you.
Well, I mean, like, I got lucky in that I got to hear the rough mixes of the record you guys are working on now. But, like, beyond that, I want to help support. It was like when we were on tour and it was like, hey, let me front some money. Oh, no, Jacob, you don't need to do that. And for the whole week. It was like, we got to the point where we were in Sandusky and you guys are like, oh, do we have enough to afford the hot dog stick to roast at the campfire? And I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm buying these. And you need to be quiet about whether or not I could spend my money.
We would have had that money had I not gone to that biker rally and bought a cigar while watching like the AC/DC cover band or whatever, like classic rock cover band.
38 Special. We could have seen 38 Special.
I wanted to go to that. I've seen 38 Special. That band is cool live and they're playing like 10 minutes away from us.
By that point, me and Zane were like, no.
Everybody was burned out on music.
Just like, we're going back to the tent and we're going to sleep for 1,000 years.
So we had 3 really bad shows in a row. And then we went to...
And then a lot of cancellations. That was a bit of a Spinal Tap tour, I must say.
Yeah, it just turned into a cool vacation because Indianapolis and Detroit were fun.
But, yes. I mean, yeah. We'll talk about that more later on down the line as well.
Someday, that'd be stories. Nice.
But... Anyway.
We were supposed to have a guest this week.
We were supposed to have a guest. I advertised on Facebook we'd have a guest. He's not here. Oh, well. So, the Oscars. The Oscars happened, and they were as... Well, it was a... It did better than expected.
Really?
Let's put it that way. It did better than expected. I'm looking back...
Go ahead.
I think not having a host really helped.
Yeah, because
easily the most cringy part of the evening was Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and Maya Rudolph's intro.
Really?
Where they just spouted off as many bad puns and cringy meme references as they could to movies in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, but what else would you expect from them?
I don't know.
I think it's fitting for who they are.
It's like one of those things, like, just... It became pretty obvious after they fired Kevin Hart that no one in Hollywood wanted to take that job. Mm-hmm. Because it's, like, not a job anyone wants. Because the Oscars, the Academy Awards have become such a joke by this point that, like, no host wants to do it. So, in that sense, I think it was actually for the benefit that they didn't have a host because it meant the focus was on the awards and on celebrating Hollywood. There weren't dumb sketches. There weren't a bunch of montages. It was just straight up, here are the awards. Let's get this over with. And it was a relief in that sense.
Well, let's talk about some of the different movies that won because I'm looking back through the list and I haven't had a chance to see all of them, but I've seen a good bit of it. I've seen a few of them.
I saw a number of them. Which ones would you like to discuss? Which categories would you like to talk about?
Well, let's start with like best picture and like best leading roles and kind of work down from there.
Okay. Best picture is stunned me.
Really?
I would call that probably the greatest Oscar upset since Crash.
Interesting. Why is that?
Because it's a very boring movie, The Green Book. And I did not hear a lot of people give it a bullion praise. I heard a lot of people say it's okay. The critical darling that I expected to win was going to be probably the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say of the movies I did see, my favorite was probably Roma, which I would have loved if it had won. I didn't expect it to win because it was literally everything that would have been against the Hollywood system.
Uh-huh.
It was a foreign language, foreign made film that was released on Netflix. And I was like, there's no chance. It has no chance of winning Best Picture, even though it's miraculously good. It does not have a chance of winning Best Picture because it's too out of left field. And if it had won, then Hollywood would have had to acknowledge Netflix as a contender in the system, and I don't think they're prepared to do that. So I did not expect it to win, but that would have been what I wanted to win.
Although the director won Best Director for that movie.
Yeah, which also surprised me. I felt that should have probably gone to Spike Lee. And not even for BlacKkKlansman, just because Spike Lee hasn't been, like, aside from that evening where he got best screenplay, I think.
Uh-huh.
He just hasn't been awarded for being a great director. And he's, I'll admit, he's pretty erratic.
Yeah.
Like, his filmography is pretty gosh darn crazy. He's done more bad movies than good. But those good movies, man, Malcolm X, Do the Right Thing. I mean, Do the Right Thing alone should have gotten him a Best Director nod at some point, I think. But, I mean, it going to the director of Roma, it's fine. But I was shocked that the Green Book won. And I know I'm not the only one who was shocked that the Green Book won. Spike Lee, actually, according to reports, got so pissed that the Green Book won that he almost stormed out of the theater.
Really?
Yes. Well, because think about it. It's a white savior narrative. It is literally... When the Green Book gets awarded Best Screenplay, and it's a movie about race relations, and who walks up? Three white dudes.
Interesting.
Like... That says it all. And I actually talked about this for a bit with John Fox, who is himself an African-American. And he felt, well, you know, in Trump's America, maybe it's what the Academy wants to be winning, because it shows that maybe we can have a discussion between black and white. And John's African-American himself. I'm not going to debate with him on race relations at all, because I'm white and it's not my place. That said, I think if the past 2 years have shown us anything, racism is not going to be solved by polite talks. It is not going to be solved by polite talks. And in that sense, if we're going to have... It was fascinating to me, the selection anyway, because it looked to me like, okay, so every single film that was up for Best Picture, putting aside my own critical thoughts on all of the movies, each one of them would have been a different statement. Like, each one of them would have been a different statement, depending on which statement to Trump do the Academies want to send. If it goes to Bohemian Rhapsody or The Favorite, it's about the gay community. If it goes to Roma, it's about the Mexican community. If it goes to Vice, then it is literally directed at the politicians. If it goes to Black Panther, Black Klansman, or Green Book, then it is about the African-American thing.
But I think that's showing...
The only exception to that was Star is Born, and that's because it was an Oscar bait movie anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Like,
but like, yeah. I don't know if, I don't know if it's the Academy... At least I would like to think so, the Academy acknowledging, you know, more diversity in the industry, which I find nice.
Which then that's the problem, though. If it wanted to acknowledge diversity... The truth is that the Green Book is not the movie you choose.
Yeah.
Because it's like despite it being about the civil rights moment in time, directed by a white dude, written by white people. Meanwhile, the movie about race relations, written and directed and starring black people, did not win.
To acknowledge but not won, which I was actually kind of putting my money on. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody is a good film, but I was leaning more towards Black Panther.
No, it's not. But
well, story aside, like the movie as a whole, if you ignore any truth,
it won Best Editing, Best fucking Editing for Bohemian Rhapsody, which cuts between shots every half a second. Are you kidding me? That was dumb. The only award that it should have won and it did was Best Actor for Rami Malek.
That I can agree with.
I think that Rami Malek probably deserved Best Actor and that was fine. But yeah. Best Editing, fuck off. That movie's editing sucks. I guess if we're judging it on the Live Aid performance, which I think is literally all they fucking did, then maybe. But no, like, rewatch the scene where they sign with John Reed. The camera cuts every half a second. It never sits still. It's insane.
That movie was... Okay, I will say, when we went to watch that in theaters, we were in the front row because that was the only seat that was available the night we saw it. And you have this massive screen in front of you, and that camera was cutting around so much, it hurts your eyes.
It hurts. It's bad editing. It's bad editing. So the fact that it won Best Editing was like, what the actual fuck? And, I mean, Best Sound Editing, I was a bit... more fine with, but like, I was also, I don't know, I think sound mixing probably should have gone to Star is Born, honestly, because there is actually a difference. I mean, you and me know there is a difference between sound editing and sound mixing.
Yeah.
And the scene in A Star Is Born where Bradley Cooper walks on the stage, if you were in a theater and hearing that scene as he walks on, I was like, wow, that is really, really... That's how it sounds on a stage.
Yeah.
And the fact that they replicated that so well in a movie theater was, like, stunning to me. Like, that was one of the moments in Star Is Born where I was actually like, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that should have won Best Sound Mixing. But it was like the Academy doesn't really know, like, what is sound editing? What's sound mixing? And so they just kind of went, Bohemian Rhapsody has Queen music. Let's give it to both. Which is totally how they decided that.
But entirely oblivious to how these awards are determined. Is it like a voting group, like with the Grammys, or is it something different?
It is a mysterious group of Hollywood executives and managers choosing the movies. I think maybe the nominations come around, like, through the system, but I think the final selection is made via, like, Hollywood executives.
Because I know how the Grammys work is usually like because one of my professors at WVU, he was nominated for a Grammy, he was nominated for a Grammy and he got to vote.
The Grammys is in the same system. I mean, the Grammys is like a bunch of, I don't know, weird. It's all executives. I mean, executives are the ones who choose, like, who wins and who gets nominated, to my knowledge.
Yeah, but how I remember was like, I think, like, there's like a baseline voting, like a general voting, and then it, like, narrows it down, but as it narrows down the categories, like, the higher up in the system you are, the more voting power you have. So then it ends up with the high-level executives and the people with power selecting the awards.
I mean, in that scenario, if we're talking, like, that's why I prefer, in the case of the Oscars, I prefer the AFI Film Awards. Mm-hmm. For one thing, they don't say what's best. They highlight 10 films and 10 TV shows that were, like, and they limit it to just the American stuff, the American-produced work. And they go, here's what we, our panel of movie creators, directors, actors, writers, here's what we felt were, like, the 10 best films made in America or produced by Americans this year, and the best TV shows, best TV seasons. And they don't say what is the one singular best. They go, here's our highlights. And that, I think, is the right way to approach it. Same kind of thing with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, even though their selection is a bit more shadier. But they've recently started letting it go up to public opinion, which is, I think, how bands like Kiss got in. But I value that more than what the Academy and the Grammys do, which is like executives who aren't creators are saying what is the best film.
Uh-huh.
Which is always just, no, that's a mistake. But I don't know. I still think that if they were going to make a point with choosing Best Picture and highlighting civil rights and, you know, all those sort of things, probably should have given it to Spike Lee, who is, like, one of the most famed, like, African-American directors of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. I don't know. What else do you want to talk about with the Oscars?
Let me pull up my list here, because I got a few notes, just a couple things that stood out to me.
But I called Best Actress. I thought Olivia Colman was going to get it, and she did.
Yeah. I haven't seen the movie, but that trailer alone was just like, I don't know.
It was all right. I thought it was fine, though. Really? I thought it was also a bit, I don't know. I'd seen the film before. I thought it was a bit too obvious.
I was very interested in that film, more so with the lighting and art style.
Yeah, I can see that.
There was I guess because it's, I'm assuming it's like Victorian England, like at that time. The way they played to that classical art style kind of appearing in the film with the way they do their lighting and kind of the color.
Yeah, I mean, it's the period of England. It's like the last reign of, it's Queen Anne. So it's based off of like historical stuff. It tells like the story of Queen Anne in like her later years.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Queen Anne was like the last actual monarch of England to be descended from the English, because she never fostered any children. So after she died, then it got handed over to one of the other duchesses from Denmark.
Yeah.
So the current ruling British monarchy, their descendants are all German. So it's all a lie. You've been fooled. But
there's a couple more that stood out to me that I want to cover. Best animated feature film going to Spider-Man: Into the Spider-Verse. You don't like it?
I like it on a presentational level. If we're judging animation based solely off of the animating style, mm-hmm. then okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Because to compare that, I think the other one.
Script, though, Isle of Dogs.
I haven't seen Isle of Dogs. In
artistic integrity, in artistic quality, in giving something original and having a good script and good animation and telling an original story, that should have gone to Wes Anderson, not mm-hmm. Spider-Man. Because the script in Spider-Verse was pretty cliche. Characters were well written, but it was a pretty cliche story.
Yeah.
And it was pretty predictable. And on that level, I would not have given it best animated film. I'm glad at least it didn't go to Pixar.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad that it did not go to Incredibles 2. Because I honestly put my bet that it would. Because, boy, did the Academies love themselves some Pixar.
Oh, definitely.
But it did not go to Pixar, and it went to Spider-Man, and it wouldn't have been my selection, but okay, it had good animation. I'll give it that.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely. But not my choice.
And then the last one I want to cover real quick is Best Documentary Feature, which I don't know. Have you seen these documentary films?
I did not see the documentary feature. I'll tell you this. At the party I was at the Oscar party I was at, where we were all placing bets on what was going to win,
mm-hmm.
This one person there was really gung-ho that RBG was going to win.
Interesting.
And it did not. It went to whichever one was about the guy climbing up the mountain.
Yeah, Free Solo.
Yeah, Free Solo. Yeah. But she really thought that RBG was going to win because of its political relevancy.
Mm-hmm.
But it did not go to that.
I like the Free Solo one. I mean, to me, it's like, I mean, RGB is a good example of if you want some relevancy, like a very good film in a time of relevancy. But Free Solo is, to me, partially timeless, but like looking at that story and like what was accomplished, like the story of that film, like what this guy accomplished is just so out there and insane that, you know, I think it might attract a wider audience.
Maybe. I mean, documentaries anyway. Like, that was one of those things. Like, there were some movies that you just couldn't see because they haven't even been released in the States yet.
Mm-hmm.
And on my end, it was like I only had enough time to try to see some of the Best Picture nominees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them I got lucky in that I'd seen them in theaters, like Black Panther, and I guess if you call it luck, Bohemian Rhapsody. But, like, others were like, I need to actually stake out and see this. And
mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, I can't talk too much about documentary. It went to Free Solo, that's fine. I haven't seen it, so I can't judge.
Mm-hmm. That's me also being, like, super into those outdoor films recently. Just like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, just like, I don't know, I'm really into that now, so.
Mm.
Living out here, it makes you get into it, all the outdoor stuff. That's what it does.
I don't know. I think this year the Oscars were definitely better than the last 2 years.
I agree, yeah.
But, like,
I think the quality of films, something about this 2018 with the types of films that came out just attracted me a lot more. Like, I went to the movies last, I saw more movies last year than I have in more recent years.
Well, that was what was surprising. I mean, there's a channel I watch called Your Movie Sucks, and this guy Adam Johnson, like, was talking over the Oscars, and he said what surprised him was that the selection of films this year for Best Picture was more middling, whereas last year there were, like, only two films that he thought were, like, really not fantastic,
mm-hmm.
which were, like, the Winston Churchill biopic,
mm-hmm.
whose name escapes me, Darkest Hour, and The Post, which was another Steven Spielberg artist film.
Yeah.
And the rest of them were, like, fine. So it was, like, one of those things where, like, in this year it was much more, like, mixed bag. And I think everyone would admit the mixed bag quality of the selections felt more so than ever before like a ratings grab. It felt like this year more so than ever they were going into it very aware of the TV ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Because last year had the worst ratings in, I think, the Academy's history.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so they were definitely trying to garner more ratings this time. And going into it, I think people were expecting it to be a bit of a disaster.
Uh-huh.
I think not having a host probably helped out a lot.
I think so, too.
And there were a lot of surprises on who I would have thought would have won and then didn't win, or things I would have liked to have won and didn't win, but and then things I got completely right.
Mm-hmm.
I do think The Green Book is an upset as Best Picture, and I know I'm not alone in that thinking.
Well, see, I liked that movie. I was interested in that movie just because the story seemed very engaging, but then, I mean, if it's just like a bunch of white people writing...
It's, you know, literally like it's a typical white savior movie. Have you seen The Blind Side?
Have you seen...
You know, Freedom Riders. Have you seen the what's the one on, what's the Stephen Biko biopic where he's not the main character?
I have no clue.
Cry Freedom, I think. Like, it's one of those kinds of movies that's like, here's how the white person helped out the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, not the message that's needed. Like, so anyway.
Yeah. All right. You want to wrap up?
Yeah, so it's time for recommendations.
Recommendations. We need like a jingle or something for this part.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
We'll write something better at some point. You're a guitarist. You can write something good.
That was a riff hard.
So what have you got?
Okay, I've got a couple I've been following recently. One's actually a Spotify playlist, which I will mention how to find it. But there's a band called Fiddlehead from I think from Boston. And there's this playlist that just, and it's not like it's anything fascinating, but just like the collection of songs on this is just like really cool to me. It's a playlist called Fiddlehead Inspirations. It's just kind of like where they draw inspiration from in their songwriting. And it's just like a bunch of like 90s indie rock with like, I mean, you got like, well, I guess it kind of beyond that. There's like Sandy, Alex G, Not a Surf, Sonic Youth, Fugazi, Sebado. I mean, there's a lot of cool bands on this playlist. So that's, I've been jamming that recently. I think you can find that over at Run for Cover Records on Spotify, and I guess I can put a link in the show notes too, because we have that ability to do that to make it easier. So
hell yes,
there's that, and then I've been jamming the new record from Bring Me the Horizon, which is like a slow grower on me. Zane texted me, he's like, I actually like it, which coming from Zane, like in Bring Me the Horizon, which is, that's just like, what the hell, this album must be, you know, unique enough to warrant Zane's recommendation. So I've been checking it out. I'm slowly growing into it. I'm still, you know, there's still some parts that are like haven't hit me yet, but I think maybe it'll get there at some point. So And it's called Ammo.
Yeah,
it's cool. How about you?
Well, recently I have been getting into, not getting into, that's a bad phrase. Out of interest, I made a playlist of all of my favorite 90s music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anything that came out in the 1990s, I just put onto a playlist and then, like, sequenced it in a way that they would all flow into each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, it's been a nostalgia trip. I mean, it really has been, like, one of my favorite playlists I've ever made.
Nice.
What's on? So I've been in a 90s mood recently. So today I listened to Pavement's Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain.
Okay.
This is their second official album. It's from 1994. Their first album, Slanted and Enchanted, was pretty well received. I think people think of it as their great masterwork.
Mm-hmm.
If Slanted and Enchanted kind of carved out its identity through its dense, layered sound, Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain is like the sound equivalent of driving a beaten-down old pickup truck. And it's just about working, and there's any moment where the engine could get fouled and the drums could just fall apart and the guitars could just collapse into a cacophony of feedback and the vocals could, like, really lose track of the plot. But they're always just ever so slightly hanging in there.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically enough for Pavement, that made a more pop-friendly sound. So it gave them one of their big, I think their potentially biggest hit, the song Cut Your Hair.
Yeah.
Which is a jam. That's just a great song.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's a really good album up until a point. I think the only time the engine finally gives out on that truck is the song Hit the Plane Down,
mm-hmm.
which luckily is the second to last track on the record. So it only falls apart, like, toward the end. And unfortunately, the final track, Fillmore Drive, like, tries its darndest to regain the momentum. And it does a fair attempt, but I don't think it really recovers afterwards. But
mm-hmm.
the rest of it is, like, the first 10 tracks are just solid early 90s alt indie rock, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want to get into that great college rock sound, I would say. you could do worse than listening to Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain by Pavement.
I'm looking at it right now on Spotify. Is it really 2.5 hours long?
That might be the deluxe edition.
Yeah, it's not labeled on. I mean, maybe it is labeled. No, it's not labeled on here as deluxe. So what's the, what are the songs? Like, what's the last song on the record so I can, like, save it on here?
Fillmore Drive.
Fillmore Drive.
Gotcha. It should only be 42 minutes.
Okay, yeah, because after that, I mean, it doesn't, like, labeled on here. There's, like, literally probably 30-some tracks.
Yeah, they have, like, on Spotify, they've got the L.A. Desert Origins version, which is, like, adds on the B-sides and live stuff and things, which the B-sides are not that fantastic, so mm-hmm. I would say just listen to the main album itself.
Gotcha. I'll go ahead and just...
The first 12 tracks, I would say. Yeah. So... Anyway, that's my recommendation for this week.
All right.
So it's been a fun time. I think we did okay.
I think we did too.
I think we did all right.
And we're coming in a bit short, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, those are the things that happen. But I'd like to thank you, Aaron, for, well, always being here.
That's what I do.
Next week we'll be taping on my 23rd birthday.
Ooh.
I'll be 23 by the time the next episode comes out.
You ready for your Blink-182 year?
I didn't listen to that song.
I wish people could see your face when I said that.
Just God. Well, yeah. Oh. So we'll be talking about a topic that I always love talking about, which is everyone's favorite albums.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually something I love to do, to probe into a person's character. I'm always like, so what's your favorite album?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be talking about that next week. Until such a time, be sure to check us out on all our social medias. You can find Aaron on Twitter and on Instagram, and you can find me on Twitter and on YouTube.
Yeah,
and I guess we also have Facebook pages as well, but like...
No, don't follow me on Facebook. I never use it, first off, and second of all.
You know, neither do I.
I don't know most people, so...
Alright.
Yeah, and but links to everything... links to everything in the show notes. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Leave a comment on your podcast platform of choice. And we will see you next week with another rockin' new episode.
Bye-bye!